that, I'm going to hand it over to Ralph.
Thanks, Jay. My name's Ralph. I'm an addict.
Hiya, Ralph.
Do you want to try something? Hold on. You hear that?
Dead man walking.
It's the valve in my heart ticking like a good one. I'm really nervous. The wonders of modern science. I might tell you a bit about that later. I'm Ralph, I'm an addict. I don't know what to do with myself. I feel really nervous. I went in there and prayed a minute ago. Don't know why, don't know who to, but I did. And we'll see what comes out. I'm not planning to say anything. There's a couple of things I thought about I'd share on. So we'll see how it goes. Thanks for your share, Esther. I last done a chair in this meeting 6 years, just under 6 years ago. It was upstairs, and I did it with Shelley. Shelley and I sat upstairs when the venue was holding the meeting upstairs, and I was just thinking about how much has changed in those last 6 years. And a lot has changed. I was 13 years clean last month. I don't know why I said that. I just am. I'm 30. I'm really proud of it. Where am I going to start? Okay, let's go. I'm the youngest son of three boys. I've got a younger sister. I was talking with my dad yesterday about... he was sharing with me about how he performed as a father. And he gives himself such an hard time about, you know, what he tried to do for us four, and my mother. And he gets quite emotional, because I'm the only one he can speak to, really. My dad, in the house. I was sharing with a friend of mine last night about, you know, how my mum's probably covered in splinters on her backside where she sits on the fence with everybody. She doesn't say anything about any other member of the family to anyone. She keeps all her feelings inside, and my dad doesn't. He's very outward in his expressions. He's quite angry and expressive. Like he was saying to last night, he said, "I tried my best, son." He said, "I know it wasn't good enough sometimes, but I tried my best." And, you know, like, for me to be sat here, where I am in my recovery, to be sharing this stuff. When I first got clean, and I went into a treatment centre in 1999, and the treatment centre was based on self-empowerment, and it seemed to be the theme that ran through the treatment facilities ethos, was there was someone else to blame. I like that. I read letters to my mum, my dad, and brother, and sister, how I felt in their company, in their house, and stuff like that. So, I found out a little later I'm a victim. So, yeah. Actually,
yeah.
I used to hate this when I first got clean, people quoting things out of literature, and I've become one of those people. So bear with me. Don't judge me. This reading was on March 21st. A treatable illness. Addiction is a disease that involves more than the use of drugs. This is for the newcomers in the room as well. At our first meeting, we may have been taken aback at the way members shared about how the disease of addiction had affected their lives. We thought to ourselves, disease? I've just got a drug problem. Hold tight. What in the world are they talking about? After some time in the programme, we began to see that our addiction ran deeper than our obsessive compulsive drug use. It's ticking even louder now. We saw that we suffered from a chronic illness that affected many areas of our lives. We didn't know where we'd caught it, but in examining ourselves, we realised that it had been present in us for many years. Just as the disease of addiction affects every area of our lives, so does the NA program. That's the good news. We attend our first meeting with all the symptoms present, the spiritual void, the emotional agony, the powerlessness, the unmanageability. Treating our illness involves much more than mere abstinence. We use the 12 steps. I said that quite self-righteously then. I've got some fun. We use the 12 steps, and although they don't cure our illness, they do begin to heal us. And as we recover, we experience the gift of life. Just for today, I will treat my illness with the 12 steps. I don't know whether I did on that day, but I'm still here. Before I picked up any drug, I used to use food. I was someone who used food to cope with what was going on, because in my house it wasn't much love flying about. So I saw solace in the cupboards in my mum and dad's house. I used to eat packets of jelly, you know, fresh, you know, that. All sorts of madness. For hundreds of thousands out of a packet, you know, them shaker things, chipping them, you know, I used to just eat. And my dad's solution to that was to ground me so I could lose some weight. So clever. My room was right next to the kitchen. I sort of can see the first indications of one of the things that affects me today, and that's approval seeking. I'll try to sort of get this weight problem sorted out. My next brother up, he was a good boxer, and I used to go down the gym with him, and I started to train down the club and stuff like that, you know, trying to get my dad's approval by losing some weight. So anyway, as we go, I'm trying to get through that. Another manifestation of my illness, probably around about 12, 13, I started to play fruit machines. I was a gambler. I used to be one of those pains in the arse that you see in arcades, standing next to people who are doing all their money. I used to stand next to people and say, I'll nudge there and I'll that one, and that one's up, you know, I never knew all the reels, just to make out I did. But what was going on? Because it could be such a hit to play these things, I used to steal money to be able to play them. So I was a barrow boy at Portobello Market, and I used to, whoever I was working for, I used to nick off of them. I used to nick off boxes of bananas and oranges and apples, and I used to sell them to other shopkeepers, or not other stallholders, but shopkeepers, to be able to play fruit machines. And when that wasn't enough, I used to steal from my parents' house. So I used to sneak out of my mum's purse, I used to steal from my dad's trousers. And then my mum had this like ornamental unit in the corner of the front room, and I've got one of the keys cut to open it. She used to like hold the club money for the family for Christmas, and I used to dip out of that. And then I got a front door key cut, and I was, you know, I was 13, 14 years of age, and I've got this instinct, this, and you know, using what I suppose is, you know, initiative to sort of get money. Now I've got a key. I've got a key cut from my nan's house, and I started to steal from her house and all. She used to hold quite a few quid in a dryer in her kitchen, so I used to nick money out of there playing fruit machines. So anyway, it came out that someone had been nicking money out of my nan's house, and you know, the focus fell on me, and I swore black and blue, and it just cut my, I think my, someone just asked me outright, and I said, yeah, it's me, I've done it. So what happened, at 14 years of age, I don't think anyone can top this, but I was in a Gamblers Anonymous meeting at 14 years of age. Someone had found me in a Gamblers Anonymous. I know we're not supposed to say about other fellowships, or are we? Actually, I'm going to say what I want. So I'm in this Gamblers Anonymous meeting. I stood up, my name's Ralph, I'm a compulsive gambler. And I never went back after that. In fact, I don't think I played another fruit machine after that. It scared me that much, I didn't want anything to do with that, going back to that place. It was in Hammersmith Grove. So as I say, I was in a fellowship meeting at 14. I had no idea about any of this stuff up here. I was just there because I got caught. I got caught, and I wanted to show. You know, I wanted to. I didn't want to. Well, I don't know. I suppose I didn't want the focus to be on me anymore. And I said to them, "Yeah, I'll go there, and I won't do that." And I suppose they took their eye off the ball, so to speak, my family, and they just let me carry on around the family unit. And the next came alcohol and cannabis, and I started to get on that. So, like I read out at the beginning, for me, addiction is not about, it doesn't say, the word drug are not mentioned in our steps. The word drugs are not mentioned in the 12 steps. The condition that I suffer from is addiction. And it's once I put one inside me, something happens. Something happens to me. Mayhem. And it wasn't like that at the beginning. There's no two ways about it. You know, Esther touched on it. You know, some of my using was quite enjoyable. At 18, I was in fields just off the M25 in aircraft hangars, out of my face on ecstasy, dancing at these raves in the countryside, and it was fantastic. Hugging people, like, and then ain't hugging people, sharing your water, where you from, mate? I'll be honest, it was nice. It was different. It was buzzing, but a couple of years after that, I was sat around someone's house because I had a few attempts at selling drugs, and I was a pony at it. I was useless. I was sitting around someone's house in Cambridge Gardens, just off of Ladbroke Grove, and they was all smoking what was called at that time Wash Rock, and they was passing around this little brandy bottle, smoking crack. I was just sitting there, sniffing cocaine off of a mirror, and I wasn't going anywhere near that. And someone just said, "Why don't you try it? Give it a go." And I did. It's very Moorish. Very Moorish. And my sister, bless her, she came home one day and she never meant anything by it. She said to me, "Oh, do you remember?" She named someone from her class. She said, "Do you remember her from our class?" She said, "Yeah, she's selling rocks in form. You know, she's selling £20 rocks, and here's her number." That was brilliant. And I was off I went. Off I went. And probably from the year of 20 to 29, I can't remember much. And I think that was the idea. I didn't want to remember much. What was going on inside of me, I suppose it started back in, you know, around puberty, was... the illness, I guess, it started to make itself known in my mind. It started to let me know that it was around. So around puberty, and I'm starting to see changes in other people. For example, when we was in the shower at school, and I hadn't actually reached puberty yet, and I'm seeing these other people who are reaching puberty, and they're developing. My head's going to me, "You're different. You're not like these people." And it started to just come along in the shape of that. It was like it started to push me away from you. And where I was having a difficult time at school, because I was overweight due to the overeating, where I was having a difficult time at school, I couldn't tell anybody, because in my family, as I said, I'm the youngest boy. I've got two brothers, they're lumps, they're massive, and one of my brothers in particular was he was very dangerous. And he used to look after me, which was really handy. But because of the environment in which I was brought up, you didn't show your feelings, and you didn't show that you was actually second best to anybody. I couldn't tell them. So I used to get bullied at school, and I was unable to say anything to anyone. I couldn't go home and say, "I'm struggling, I'm getting bullied. You know, I'm not finding it too nice at school. Can you help me out?" I was unable to do that. So what I did, I used to just bunk off. play Money Up the Wall before school, go and have a chip butty in the calf at lunchtime and then piss off home. No one noticed. No one noticed from school. I was actually in a school in Shepherd's Bush, it was called Christopher Wren at the time, and then it got changed to Hammersmith School. One evening in the evening news, it was a headline on the front of the evening news, the worst school in Britain. I was really proud of it. And it was, for me, the worst school I could ever have gone to. For me, those years of secondary school were horrific. I was so alone. I was so... introverted. So when drugs and alcohol came along, it enabled me to sort of cope. But all the while, the disease is starting to take shape. All my friends are off getting jobs and girlfriends and having kids, and my head's going, "You're ugly, you ain't going to get a bird. You see a nice looking girl, don't even bother, she's out of your league." I wouldn't treat my worst enemy like that. Things I used to say. So, as I said, from the ages of 20 to 29, I can't remember too much, and that was the plan. Not really that. I hadn't bothered about much else. Get drugs. There were a couple of, I did actually have a girlfriend. I had a girlfriend from the age of 19 to 29. I ended it on the suggestion of my group. Got to blame them. But it was just that it was a relationship. It was turbulent. It was violent. It was for her. It must have been horrific. In fact, I've just recently done a fifth step, and I'm writing about my behaviour in this relationship. And it's not nice to look back upon, but I wasn't a well boy. And we went our separate ways when I got into treatment. But I had one attempt at giving up crack. I went to one of these crack day programs in 1996 on the Goulburn Road, and I used to come home with this sleep tea. I used to proudly show it to my mum and dad. "Look, they give me this. This will help me sleep. This is the elixir of life. This is it. I'm going to be cured." And I'm just sitting downstairs in my bedroom smoking copious amounts of dope. I didn't know anything about cross addiction or swapping one for another. I think at the time, I don't know. I'm not going to start getting into drug workers and all that. My drug worker enabled me to, she actually accessed funds for me to go to rehab. So I'm really grateful to her. So in 96, I had an opportunity of giving up. And whilst there, I'm sharing this with a sponsee earlier actually, about, we were talking about resentments. I just started a sponsee on a full step, talking about resentments. And when I was 26, just around the corner from it, I was watching a football match, Euro 96, and England were playing Germany at Wembley in the semi-final. And I was very drunk. I was around Covent Garden. There was a bar around there called The Spot. And I was in there with a mate. We went around there to watch the game. We were really drunk. Really drunk. Really rowdy in there. And Gareth Southgate missed his penalty, as we know, well, most of us know, and he made a lot of money out of that. And when he did, and we lost, I threw a stool at the screen in this bar, picked up the stool, threw it at the screen, and I was escorted out by the bouncers, and that was okay. They chucked me out, just pushed me, and I walked around the corner, I said to my mate, "I ain't having that." I was right there in guilt when I had a drink. "I ain't having that." I went around there, and I woke up with a crowd around me. Again, that head, that disease, that illness went, "Go round here, straighten them out." I ended up with a broken jaw, broken cheekbone, a broken nose, and I got weighed in. And I'll get to the point in a minute, but what happened, I had they weren't the first. I had one operation to put a metal plate, still in there now. My head tells me I've got a crooked face, which I have in effect, but some people don't really notice it. But I've got a metal plate in there, in the side of my face. And what happened was when I woke up from that operation, they let me go out and have cigarettes and stuff. But what happened is that the first plate bent, so I had to go under the knife again, so I had another operation. And I woke up the next time with my teeth all wired together. My mouth was clamped shut. And I didn't wonder why, but I soon found out why. I was in a single room in this hospital when I went into the bathroom and I saw my face. I looked like a panda. My face was, my two black eyes, my face was out here, and I looked like I'd been dragged through four bushes backwards. I looked terrible, and I had reporters at the door asking for interviews and stuff like that. And I thought to myself, I've got to stop smoking crack. I've got to stop, straighten my life out, stop using. And I got released a few days after the operation, and I got home. Got into my mum and dad had put a room aside next to the bathroom for me to have some close access to the bathroom. When they went to bed, I got on the phone and rang my dealer. I bought half a 16th for crack. I got all my teeth wired to go up. I remember the diet lemonade Sainsbury's tin. I'm sitting there like that, all my teeth wired together, smoking crack, praying that in my head. So there was my answer to that. You ain't stopping. Crack on, you ain't stopping. And 3 years later, rolled a tape four because we're getting on. I got myself into a situation. I got chucked out of a girlfriend's house. She slung me out, and I ended up down this guy's house. He was an outpatient at the local psychiatric hospital. And I used to smoke crack down his house, and it was an awful, awful experience living with him there. Awful, because I was there mainly. We went out one day, get his medication up the hospital. I've got a second hand furniture salesman from across the street, Tom, to come in and value up some of his bits. get a pipe before he come back. And I suppose that's the sort of thing I want to get across to people with. Seeing me, I was a scumbag. I was a scumbag when I was using. I wasn't someone who was on the pavement. I wasn't holding people up. I wasn't snatching bags of money. I robbed from my family. I was a gyro junkie. And if you weren't looking, I would have let the sugar out of your tea if I thought I'd get a rock for it. So I got myself into a situation where I was robbing minicab drivers at knife point. I did five of them. Cut a long story short, was around someone's house. He said, have you seen the local paper? There's a description, they're looking for this man. I started crying. He couldn't see me, but I started getting really scared. I started crying. Some gangster I was. And I rang up that drugs worker who got me the funding. I went and saw her up at Ladbroke Grove in a Roby clinic, and we discussed options. And I got sent to a treatment centre in West. I got sent to a treatment centre in West Superman. And that would have been on the 22nd of February 1999. Went down on a train from Paddington, and I stayed in Western Superman for three and a half years. Stayed there for 3.5 years. And whilst in there, H and I come in. They told me that you never have to do this again. If you don't want to come back to places like this, this is what we did, this is what we do, and this works. And I did it. I've been doing it ever since. I haven't found it necessary to pick up a drug. But to refer you to what I said at the beginning, I've still got the disease, still got the illness. Still makes itself known when I wake up in the morning. You're fat, you're ugly, you're no good to no one. It ain't that bad as it used to be. I shared with some people the other day about it, and it sort of more speaks in me and more of my own voice. It's not so abusive. But it's still there, and I'm able now to sort of face it. For years, I didn't. There's a number of situations and events in my life that, in my recovery, that I'm only now addressing. And one of them is I'm in quite a bit of debt. And the last time I did this share here, I would have been right in the mix of all that debt, that compulsive overspending, or whatever it is they call it, places where they deal with debts. I would have had my Vespa parked outside. I got a Vespa on tick. I was getting loans to pay off loans to pay off loans. I weren't running any of this by any sponsor. There was no sponsorship involvement here. This was self-sponsorship. I've started relationships off without running stuff by sponsors. I've hurt people. I've been hurt. And I referred to it at the beginning. At 8 years clean, I discovered I had heart disease and I had to have open heart surgery. And through all this stuff, I had a son, he was born in 2006. I haven't felt it necessary to use a drug at all because, I've heard my sponsors share it. I don't shop like I used to use drugs. I don't eat like I used to use drugs. I don't have sex like I used to use drugs. This is Narcotics Anonymous. I don't know if this is going to be controversial. It's okay if it is, but I don't have a drug problem anymore. I don't. But on the flip side of that, the tipping point for that is so thin, so narrow, that actually I am. Because if I don't do this, I don't even stay involved. Through the service that I do, I ain't going to go into what I do. I do service. I've got a sponsor. I trust him. I'm starting to involve him a bit more in my decision making. He might be. He makes a different thing. But that's okay. He wants me to call him more, and there's something up. I'll run by my head. I'm only kidding. Now I've got. I was thinking about it today. I was walking down Oxford Street. I had my bike because you can't ride down a certain part of Oxford Street. I had my bike, a pair of shorts on. It's sunny, glasses, sunglasses, and I'm in and amongst life, people out shopping, people working, and hot sunny day like that when I was staying down at Alex's house down in Ladbroke Grove, hot sunny day, particularly a Saturday, to go out, to even run across the street where the phone box was to ring him up, to get one, was daunting. It was so scary. I used to go, no, you go over there. Because I thought, like, there's going to be like a million men outside marching, and they're all going to be watching me. Don't have to be on window duty no more. It's like, I hear it sometimes. I don't know whether people mean it, but I do forget where I come from sometimes. And people say, I never forget where I come from. I do. I get caught up in life. I've got stuff happening in my life. I'm in a relationship with a woman who I love dearly. That's another story for another time. But I'm living life today, and it's because of Narcotics Anonymous. It really is. Everything I have in my life is a direct result.
9 minutes left.
Coming to this fellowship. It is. Way to go out, wouldn't it? What else can I share about? Okay. I don't really know. I think that owes that much of emotion. They caught me by surprise a little bit. I'm on my sixth sponsor, number six. The sponsorship for me is, it's no longer a father and son relationship. I no longer think when I pick up the phone and say to my sponsor, oh, I've done it again, I no longer think I'm going to get told off. You know, I no longer think I'm going to be wagged at down the phone. Not that I'd see it, finger, but, you know, no longer think I'm going to get told off, because that's how it used to be for me. A sponsor was someone for me early on that was going to tell me how to live my life, basically. And that's been far from my experience. I'll tell you about my experience of my first ever NA meeting on the outside of treatment. This is quite a turning point for me in my recovery. It was in Western Super.
Excuse me, my chicken pie before I come out. Big bit and all.
It was Western Supermare, 5:15. It was called an electric chair meeting. For some of you who haven't been in an electric chair meeting, it's basically this. The secretary asks the first person to share. The first person to share asks the second person. The second gets to ask the third. And that's the more format. Hence, electric chair. And I remember sitting in this meeting. I was 2 days out of treatment. Got out on the Monday, so this is the Wednesday. Yeah, 2-3 days out of treatment. I'm looking around the room at all these people, and it was a circle in this meeting. I was just sat there, just watching, just observing. I suppose that's an important lesson for me, because if I was like that when I come into my first meeting, I'm being watched by newcomers, I guess. So anyway, before I left treatment, my group had bought me a gift. It was a bracelet, an ID bracelet, but there was nothing on it. It was blank. And that day, the Wednesday, I'd gone into an engraver's shop to ask them to put on the date that I left treatment, which was the 9th of August, 1991. I remember going into this engraver's shop and just come out of treatment, so I was on my guard, and this fellow behind the counter was quite effeminate. He said to me, what's this date about? And does it mean something? Is it a significant date? I said, yeah, it's the day I come out of somewhere. I didn't want to tell him I'd just come out of a rehab. Because rehab's never had a real good name in Western Supermare. And I shared this in this meeting, and it got a laugh just as it did just then. And I wanted that. That's what I wanted. I wanted to be acknowledged and, you know, to be seen as funny. But what happened at the end of the meeting is the secretary of the meeting came over to me, and he did what I imagine a number of secretaries have done in our history. They've approached him and they've welcomed him and said, hello, nice to have you here. He introduced himself and we never exchanged numbers, because I never had nothing when I left treatment. But he knew where the dry house I was in. He used to come and collect me not every day, periodically, to take me for breakfast and go to the gym with him. So, for myself, I don't underestimate how powerful greeting a newcomer is. Really don't. Because who knows what would have happened? So, you know, let's say that the secretary of the meeting was gay and he took offence at what I said. It might not have gone my way, and I might not have been welcome there, and I might not have come back. That may well have been what had gone down, but it didn't. This gentleman came over to me and he welcomed me. And for someone who, because Esther touched on it about self-esteem and how she felt about herself, for someone to come and visit her in hospital, how I felt about myself when I came into recovery. Like I described, wake up in the morning, I'm greeted by, you fucking ugly, in the mirror. What have you got to... And that's how I... that's what I portrayed to the world. That's how I felt about myself. So to have that, and to be told that you're welcome, and you can address your drug problem here, well, so quits in, you know, it's all... It's, what more could I ask for? And I've stuck at it. I've made loads of rickets. I've done loads of good things. Like I said in my prayer in the toilet there, you know, I ask God to take me good and bad, because I am. I'm not perfect. I'm a recovering addict. He's trying his best. And I don't really know what else to say. Just want to say thanks to Gary for asking me to speak here tonight. It's always an honour to share for our fellowship. I always get quite nervous before I'm about to do it. I'm being watched and being observed. It's like being at that window again. You know, on window duty. Everyone's watching you. Actually, that watching you. I'm a grateful member of this fellowship. Am I a grateful membership? Grateful member? Yeah, I'm a grateful member. Today I'm grateful. I don't use drugs. I've got a life that's so well worthwhile. And if you're new and this is daunting to you, you need someone to talk to, as well as the people that offered themselves up. You need someone to talk to at the end. I'm here to listen to you. I'll take your phone number. We'll meet for coffee. That's what someone done for me once. I'll leave it there. Thanks.